This is your volunteer reader and Flagstaff, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you this week's edition of Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Weekly Reveille, a program devoted to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today, we have news from our military news websites, as well as our Veterans Service Organization websites and publications, and the Veterans Administration. So we'll start with this item from militarytimes.com. Of course, this was reported in much of the media, and very sad news. Jimmy Carter, 39th president and Navy veteran, dies at 100. This is by Jonathan Lehrfeld. Former President Jimmy Carter, the 39th leader of the United States, a Navy veteran and the only commander-in-chief to graduate from the United States Naval Academy, died on Sunday at his home in Plains, Georgia. He was 100 years old. Carter, who began hospice care at his home in Georgia in February 2023, is often remembered as the one-term president who led the nation in the wake of the Vietnam War and oversaw treaties involving the Panama Canal and a diplomatic relationship between Egypt and Israel. But before Carter's 1977-81 presidency, Carter served his nation in the sea service. Born James Earl Carter Jr. in Plains, Georgia, the sailor-turned-president attended Georgia Institute of Technology as a Navy ROTC student before receiving an appointment to the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. Inspired by his uncle to join the service, he graduated in June 1946 and commissioned as an ensign, according to Naval History and Heritage Command. Carter received his first assignment with the battleship Wyoming, stationed at Norfolk, Virginia, where he served until the vessel was decommissioned in 1947. He then served on the battleship Mississippi as a training and education officer. Following a six-month course at the U.S. Navy Submarine School in New London, Connecticut, Carter served aboard the Balayo-class submarine Pomfret, based in Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, and later as an engineering officer with the K-1 submarine. After a promotion to lieutenant in 1952, Carter began working with the Navy's nuclear submarine development team. Only a few months later, he successfully helped prevent a nuclear disaster. When a power surge at Chalk River Laboratories in Ontario, Canada, caused fuel rods to melt in a nuclear reactor, damaging its core, Carter and his team assisted in the response, according to the Navy. Each person was allowed up to only 90 seconds at a time for the cleanup work due to extreme radioactivity. We were fairly well instructed then on what nuclear power was, but for about 6 months after that, I had radioactivity in my urine, Carter previously told CNN. While preparing to work aboard one of the first subs to operate on atomic power, Carter's father passed away in July 1953, and the young naval officer opted for an honorable discharge to return to Georgia and assist his family's peanut-growing business. It was a very torturous decision for me to make, Carter previously told CNBC. Carter remained in the Naval Reserve until 1961, transferring to the retired reserve at the rank of lieutenant before beginning a career in politics. Five other presidents served in the Navy, including Carter's four presidential predecessors, as well as George H.W. Bush, according to the Navy's Heritage Command. The third Seawolf-class nuclear-powered submarine is named after the former president. Last year, a building at the Naval Academy was renamed after Carter following a congressionally mandated decision to redesignate military assets across all branches with ties to the Confederacy. Carter's grandson indicated in May that his grandfather was coming to the end during an event with the Carter Center, the nonprofit the former president and eventual Nobel Peace Prize recipient founded after he left office to advance human rights internationally. Carter's wife, Rosalind, died in November 2023. And that's Jimmy Carter, 39th president and Navy veteran, dies at 100. Our next article from December 27th is by John Gutman. At 103, this P-51 Mustang pilot could soon become World War II's last ace. In the decades following World War II, numerous fighter pilots have emerged from the record books to belatedly receive an honor long denied them, credit for downing 5 enemy aircraft, and recognition as an ace. Many of them were discovered, and their records corrected by the American Fighter Aces Association. Arguably, the last such man is James McCubbin, a North American P-51D Mustang pilot of the 8th Air Force, who is currently under consideration at 103 years old. McCubbin was born in Kansas City, Missouri on March 5, 1921. Upon graduating from high school in Kansas City, he studied engineering at the University of Missouri. After 2 years of college, however, he left school to join the United States Army Air Corps as an aviation cadet, taking most of his training in Texas. Once training was behind him, he was assigned to the 385th Squadron of the 364th Fighter Group, based at Honington, England. Initially equipped with a Lockheed P-38J Lightning, the squadron began transitioning to the North American P-51D Mustang in August 1944. On September the 23rd, McCubbin was promoted to first lieutenant. The original certified correct flight records for the 385th, either by the squadron commander, squadron operations officer, Major William S. Crombie Jr., or his assistant operations officer, Thomas P. Farrell, state McCubbin flew in September and October 1944 without claiming any victories. On November 21st, however, he was credited with destroying 2 Junkers Ju-88s. On December the 2nd, McCubbin attacked a Messerschmitt fighter at approximately 15,000 feet over Mannheim, Germany, reporting hits around the enemy's cockpit and noting, "As I pulled up, I saw him hit the ground without bailing out." 3 days later, McCubbin was flying a P-51D Mustang when he had his most memorable aerial encounter with a host of Nazi Focke-Wulf FW-190 fighter aircraft, as described in his combat report. "I was flying Yellow No. 3 in 385th Fighter B Squadron. As the bombers began their bombing run, we moved away from the close escort we'd been furnishing. As we headed north, we saw a gaggle of 50-plus enemy aircraft at 10 o'clock to us. They were at about 22,500. We were at 23,000 in behind the nearest enemy aircraft. I swung to the outside of the turn, picked out a target on the other side of the gaggle. I opened fire at about 700 yards dead astern. The enemy took no evasive action. I closed to 300 yards, firing several bursts. The FW-190 blew up in flames. The gaggle maintained its practice of flying straight and level. I picked out another target, and at about 400 yards dead astern, I opened fire, closing on 250 yards. I fired several bursts, obtaining numerous hits. The enemy pilot bailed out. I immediately pulled up behind a third FW-190, opened fire at 300 yards, and closed to 200 yards. I obtained hits all over him. He appeared to be out of control and went into a dive, heading straight down. I got behind a fourth FW-190, and at 200 yards, I opened fire. I closed to 100 yards. I observed many hits. He split-S'd, and I followed him. I was firing short bursts and saw his elevator come off. I was then reaching compressibility, so I pulled out. He was still going straight down when I pulled out at 11,000 feet. I went down to the deck looking for more enemy, but found nothing. I then headed home. I claim 3 FW-190s destroyed, 1 FW-190 probably destroyed in the air. Ammo expended, 836 rounds, 50 caliber. The 385th Intelligence Officer, First Lieutenant William J. Neasley, gave McCubbin credit for the first 2 FW-190s, counting the other 2 as probables. It is possible, however, that the 3rd Focke-Wulf was upgraded to confirmed status. In any case, by the end of December, McCubbin's personal aircraft, the P-51D, which he dubbed Mary Al, most likely after her girlfriend, displayed 6 swastikas below the cockpit, indicating him to be an ace. On Christmas Eve, however, he was forced to crash land Mary Al on an abandoned German airfield near Lille, France, rejoining his squadron and obtaining a new plane by January 1, 1945. He opened the new year by shooting down another FW-190. Besides seeking action in the sky, McCubbin stated that he loved strafing trains and locomotives. On February 19, 1945, however, his luck ran out. Struck by anti-aircraft fire, McCubbin survived a crash landing east of Bonn. After a couple of weeks walking in the woods, evading capture while nabbing food off the back porches of farmhouses, he eventually was caught and sent to what he described as Frankfurt, but was more likely the nearby Dahlag Luft near Oberbrussel, northwest of Frankfurt am Main. Virtually all Allied airmen captured during World War II spent some time in solitary confinement at this processing center, followed by interrogation to determine who were prisoners of war and who were spies planted in their midst by their captors. McCubbin's experiences included matching wits with Obergefreiter Hans Joachim Gottlieb Scharf, noted for his subtle finesse in gaining or at least confirming information for more than 500 prisoners of war. Once out processed from Dahlag Luft, McCubbin was sent to the POW camp at Moosburg, where he remained until the end of the war, and he joined thousands of airmen released into freedom. For his actions, McCubbin was awarded an Air Medal with Oak Leaf Cluster. To this was later added the Distinguished Flying Cross, Purple Heart, Presidential Unit Citation, and the rank of Captain. After World War II, he served in the U.S. Air Force Reserve as a pilot instructor and an instrument instructor while using the GI Bill to continue his education, receiving his engineering degree 2 years later. In the interim, he met and married his wife, Betty, and they raised 4 children, Carlene, Jack, Debbie, and Ken. After receiving his degree, McCubbin resigned his commission just before the Korean War in 1950. He formed a small but successful plastics company and eventually sold it. He then worked as an engineer for cooling tower manufacturer Marley Company. After spending 12 years with his family in Mexico City as manager of Marley's subsidiary there, he returned to the U.S. at 55 years old and retired. He spent most of his time thereafter with his wife at the Renaissance Legacy Senior Living in Rome, Georgia. After his wife's death, McCubbin made a special request to be reunited with an old friend for his 101st birthday. In response, the Commemorative Air Force flew its P-51D to Rome on June 4, 2022. After sitting once more in his old aircraft, he declared, "Felt so good to be in that cockpit like I did." Editor's note, a special thanks to Gilbert Ferry, J. Ward Boyce, and McCubbin family for documentation in reconstructing McCubbin's career. That article from militarytimes.com, at 103, this P-51 Mustang pilot could soon become World War II's last ace. Our next article is from the Associated Press Report for America and reported on stripes.com, the website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper. This psychedelic therapy begins in Colorado, causing tensions between conservatives and veterans. This is by Jesse Bedane from the 1st of January. Colorado Springs. As Colorado becomes the second state to legalize psychedelic therapy this week, a clash is playing out in Colorado Springs, where conservative leaders are restricting the treatment over objections from some of the city's 90,000 veterans who've become flag bearers for psychedelic therapy to treat post-traumatic stress disorder. Colorado residents voted to legalize the therapeutic use of psilocybin, the chemical compound found in psychedelic mushrooms, in a 2022 ballot measure, launching 2 years of rulemaking before it could be used to treat conditions such as depression and PTSD. This week, companies and people will be able to apply for licenses to administer the mind-altering drug, though treatment will likely not be available for some months as applications are processed. Colorado joined Oregon in legalizing psilocybin therapy, although the drug remains illegal in most other states and federally. Over the last year, a growing number of Oregon cities have voted to ban psilocybin. While Colorado metros cannot ban treatment under state law, several conservative cities have voted to preemptively restrict what are known as healing centers. At a city council meeting in Colorado Springs this month, members were set to vote on extending the state prohibition on healing centers from 1,000 feet to 1 mile from certain locations, such as schools. From the lectern, veterans implored them not to. "We have an opportunity to support veterans, and it's really an easy one to say yes to," said Lane Bellone, a Special Forces veteran who said he'd benefited from his own psychedelic experiences. Bellone argued that the restrictions effectively limit the number of centers and would mean longer waiting lists for the treatment. Veterans have pulled in some conservative support for psychedelic therapy, managing to set it apart from other politically charged drug policies, such as legalizing marijuana. That distinction was made clear by Councilmember David Lineweber, who said at the council meeting both that marijuana is literally killing our kids and that he supported greater access to psilocybin therapy. Psilocybin is far more restricted in Colorado than marijuana, which the state legalized in 2014. Psilocybin is decriminalized, but there won't be recreational dispensaries for the substance, which will be largely confined to licensed businesses and therapy sessions with licensed facilitators. Patients will have to go through a risk assessment, preliminary meetings, then follow-up sessions, and remain with a facilitator while under the drug's influence. The psilocybin will also be tested and the companies that grow them regulated by a state agency. Still, allowing broader access to the treatment hasn't been easy for most of the city council members, including three who are veterans. Colorado Springs is home to several military installations, including the U.S. Air Force Academy, and local leaders have touted it as an ideal community for retired service members. "I will never sit up here and criticize a veteran for wanting to find a medical treatment to fix or to help with the issues that they carry," said Council President Randy Helms, a veteran himself. "Still," he continued, "do I think that it's helpful to not just veterans, but individuals? Probably so. Do I think it still needs to be tested under strict requirements? Yes." Colorado Springs City Council passed the proposed restrictions. While research has shown promise for psychedelic drugs such as psilocybin and MDMA, also known as Molly, in helping people with conditions such as alcoholism, depression, and PTSD, the scientific field remains in its relatively early stages. "I'm very positive about the potential value, but I'm very concerned that we've gotten too far ahead of our skis," said Jeffrey Lieberman, a professor of psychiatry at Columbia University, who's been involved in studies of psychedelic drugs' therapeutic efficacy. "The risks," said Lieberman, "include customers being misled and paying out of pocket for expensive treatments." He also said there are cases where the drugs can exacerbate some extreme mental health conditions, such as schizophrenia. In Oregon, where the treatment started in June 2023, costs can reach $2,000 for one session. Of the over 16,000 doses administered in the state, staff have only called 911 or taken a patient to the hospital five times. Other Colorado Springs City Council members raised concerns that the Food and Drug Administration has not approved psilocybin to treat mental health conditions, and in August rejected the psychedelic MDMA to treat PTSD. A number of clinical trials are still underway for both drugs. Some researchers, advocacy groups, and veterans worry that waiting on slow-moving bureaucracy, namely the FDA, carries its own risks as people continue to struggle with mental illnesses. Advocates argue that psychedelic therapy offers an option to those for whom talk therapy alone and antidepressants have not helped. "This is a crisis that we're in, and this is a tool that we can add to our toolbox," said Taylor West, executive director of the Healing Advocacy Fund, which advocates for psychedelic therapy. Bellone said he's carried his military experience long after leaving the Special Forces. It started when he first heard artillery sirens wailing in a U.S. base in Iraq, his breath catching with fear for a few thudding moments. That fear kept him on edge. When he returned stateside and found himself keeping his back to the wall, looking for exits to the room he was in, never quite able to give himself fully to the music at a concert. A psychedelic experience with psilocybin, said Bellone, helped him connect the fear that attached him in the war zone to the ceaseless anxiety at home. "Didn't solve everything overnight," he said, "but it allowed him to better identify when that humming fear was getting in the way of a joyful life." And that was psychedelic therapy begins in Colorado, causing tension between conservatives and veterans. Our next article is from militarytimes.com from December 31st. Pentagon chief loses bid to reject 9/11 plea deals. And this is by Ellen Nickmeyer of the Associated Press and reported on militarytimes.com. Military Appeals Court has ruled against Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's effort to throw out the plea deals reached for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and two other defendants in the 9/11 attacks, a U.S. official said. The decision puts back on track the agreements that would have the three men plead guilty to one of the deadliest attacks on the United States in exchange for being spared the possibility of the death penalty. The attacks by al-Qaeda killed nearly 3,000 people on September 11, 2001, and helped spur the U.S. invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq in what the George W. Bush administration called its war on terror. The Military Appeals Court released its ruling Monday night, according to the U.S. official who was not authorized to discuss the matter publicly and spoke on condition of anonymity. Military prosecutors and defense attorneys for Mohammed, the accused mastermind of the attacks, and two co-defendants reached the plea agreements after 2 years of government-approved negotiations. The deals were announced late last summer. Supporters of the plea agreements see them as a way of resolving the legally troubled case against the men at the U.S. Military Commission at Guantanamo Bay Naval Base in Cuba. Pretrial hearings for Mohammed Walid bin Atas and Mustafa al-Hawassi have been underway for more than a decade. Much of the focus on pretrial arguments has been on how torture of the men while in CIA custody in the first years after their detention may taint the overall evidence in the case. Within days of news of the plea deal this summer, Austin issued a brief order saying he was nullifying them. He cited the gravity of the 9/11 attacks and saying that, as defense secretary, he should decide on any plea agreements that would spare the defendants the possibility of execution. Defense lawyers said Austin had no legal authority to reject a decision already approved by the Guantanamo court's top authority and said the move amounted to unlawful interference in the case. The military judge hearing the 9/11 case, Air Force Colonel Matthew McCall, had agreed that Austin lacked standing to throw out the plea bargains after they were underway. That had set up the Defense Department's appeal to the Military Appeals Court. Austin now has the option of taking his effort to throw out the plea deals to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. The Pentagon did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Separately, the Pentagon said it had repatriated one of the longest-held detainees at the Guantanamo military prison, a Tunisian man who U.S. authorities approved for transfer more than a decade ago. Rida bin Salin al-Yazidi's return to Tunisia leaves 26 men at Guantanamo. That's down from a peak population of about 700 Muslim men detained abroad and brought to the prison in the years after the September 11th attacks. Al-Yazidi's repatriation leaves 14 men awaiting transfer to other countries after U.S. authorities waived any prosecution and cleared them as security risks. The Biden administration, pressed by rights groups to free remaining Guantanamo detainees held without charge, transferred out three other men this month. The U.S. said it's searching for suitable and stable countries willing to receive the remaining 14. In a statement, the U.S. military said it worked with authorities in Tunisia for the responsible transfer of al-Yazidi. He'd been a prisoner at Guantanamo since 2002 when the U.S. began sending Muslim detainees taken abroad there. Al-Yazidi is the last of a dozen Tunisian men once held at Guantanamo. Of those remaining at Guantanamo, seven, including Mohammed and his 9/11 co-defendants, face active cases. Two others of the 26 total have been convicted and sentenced by the military commission. That article was Pentagon chief loses bid to reject 9/11 plea deals. Next from Military Times, we have even in the headline-grabbing world of drones, the Predator stands out. This article is by John Gutman from the 31st of December. Military use of remotely piloted aircraft or drones dates back to World War I experiments with practice targets while guided aerial weapons were operational by World War II. But it took advances in electronics and satellite technology to realize the unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs, were capable of being controlled from thousands of miles away. The first operational reconnaissance drone, the Predator, went on to assume a more aggressive role. Its inventor, engineer Abraham Karim, was born in Baghdad, ironic considering how much his invention would serve in Iraq. Karim's family moved to Israel in 1951, and he built his first UAV for the Israeli Air Force during the 1973 Yom Kippur War. Immigrating to the United States, he soon drew the attention of the CIA. Karim developed a series of prototypes, the Amber and Nat 750 for General Atomics, before test flying his ultimate design on July 3, 1994. A year later, it entered service with the CIA and the U.S. Air Force as the RQ-1 recon drone Predator. Coinciding with the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, the U.S. Department of Defense was developing an operational drone capable of toting ordnance. The RQ-1 proved adaptable to carrying an AGM-114 Hellfire air-to-surface anti-tank missile under each wing. Accepted in 2002 and promptly deployed to Afghanistan and Iraq, the armed Predator was designated the MQ-1 multi-role drone. On December 23, 2002, over the no-fly zone in Iraq, an Iraqi Mikoyan Gurevich MiG-25 engaged an MQ-1 armed with AIM-92 Stinger air-to-air missiles and shot it down, winning the first encounter between a conventional warplane and a UAV. In 2011, the 268th and last MQ-1 left the General Atomics plant. By then, it had accumulated more than 1 million flight hours and truly earned its Predator moniker. On March 9, 2018, the Air Force retired the MQ-1, which had been supplanted by General Atomics' improved MQ-9 Reaper. And that's even in the headline-grabbing world of drones, the Predator stands out. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. Remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming at a time of your choosing or the Sun Sounds of Arizona stream on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or on the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, which is available on the Apple App Store for the iPhone or iPad or the Google Play Store for your Android phone or device. Well, let's turn now to a publication of one of our veteran service organizations, the Military Officer Magazine, which is the publication of the Military Officers Association of America. And they have this article on healthy living: reduce the risk of Alzheimer's disease. Take control of your health with these three lifestyle habits. Alzheimer's disease is the most common form of dementia affecting millions of people worldwide. While the exact cause of Alzheimer's is not fully understood, research suggests that a combination of genetic, lifestyle, and environmental factors contribute to its development. However, there are strategies that you can adopt to lower the risk of Alzheimer's. Here are the top three ways to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's backed by scientific research. Regular physical exercise. Exercise is one of the most effective ways to protect the brain from cognitive decline and Alzheimer's disease. Physical activity increases blood flow to the brain, promoting growth of new neurons and enhancing neuroplasticity, which is crucial for memory and cognitive function. Aerobic exercise in particular has been linked to a reduced risk of Alzheimer's. A study published in The Lancet Neurology found that regular physical activity reduced the risk of dementia by up to 30%, including Alzheimer's disease. Exercise also helps regulate blood sugar and insulin levels, reduces inflammation, and improves cardiovascular health, factors closely associated with brain health. The Alzheimer's Research and Prevention Foundation recommends 30 minutes of moderate intensity exercise most days of the week to support cognitive function and reduce Alzheimer's risk. A Mediterranean diet. Diet plays a crucial role in brain health, and adhering to a Mediterranean diet has been consistently associated with a lower risk of Alzheimer's disease. This diet, rich in antioxidants and healthy fats, particularly omega-3 fatty acids, offers hope in protecting brain cells from damage and reducing inflammation, thereby lowering the risk of Alzheimer's. A study published in the BMJ showed that individuals who adhered closely to a Mediterranean diet had a slower rate of cognitive decline and a lower risk of developing Alzheimer's. Including omega-3 rich foods, such as fish, has been linked explicitly to reducing beta amyloid plaques, a hallmark of Alzheimer's. Mental and social engagement. Keeping the brain active through mental stimulation and social interaction is another critical strategy for reducing the risk of Alzheimer's. Activities such as reading, playing puzzles, learning new skills, or engaging in social events can help build cognitive reserve, which is the brain's ability to compensate for age-related changes and resist damage. According to a study published in Neurology, individuals who frequently engaged in cognitive activities in midlife had a 46% lower risk of developing Alzheimer's disease later in life compared to those who did not participate in such activities. Social engagement is also crucial, as solid social connections have been shown to reduce the risk of cognitive decline and dementia, making you feel connected and supported in your journey to brain health. There's no guaranteed way to prevent Alzheimer's disease, but adopting a healthy lifestyle that includes regular exercise, a Mediterranean diet, and mental and social engagement can significantly reduce the risk. This article is by Lieutenant Colonel Nick Barringer, U.S. Army retired. He's the Chief Academic Officer and Dean of Graduate Studies at Lionel University. Title of that article, Reduce the Risk of Alzheimer's Disease. We'll return to Stripes.com for this item. Just put me in a pine box. Some veterans show interest in lower-cost green burials offered at 3 national cemeteries. This article is by Linda F. Hershey of Stars and Stripes from the 29th of December, Washington. Christopher, a Marine Corps veteran who survived a truck explosion while serving in Afghanistan, said the near-death experience caused him to consider his own mortality and how he wants his burial to be handled. The 35-year-old Colorado resident who declined to provide his last name said he's done advanced planning and conveyed his desire to have a natural burial, also known as a green burial, that does not burden loved ones with thousands of dollars in funeral bills. In contrast to the pomp and circumstance of the traditional military funerals, a growing number of veterans say they prefer a simple, low-cost burial that foregoes the luxury of lined caskets and marble urns for a natural interment with minimal impact to the environment, according to a recent survey of veterans by the Department of Veterans Affairs. Based on survey feedback, the VA recently opened green burial sections at 3 national cemeteries that limit markers and landscaping, forego chemicals and embalming fluids, and use caskets, shrouds, and urns from natural materials that degrade over time. The green burials are offered at Pikes Peak National Cemetery in Colorado Springs, Colorado, the National Memorial Cemetery of Arizona in Phoenix, and the Florida National Cemetery in Bushnell, which is north of Tampa. The VA survey showed respondents ages 40 and under had the greatest interest in natural burials and overwhelmingly supported green alternatives. Just put me in a pine box where my body can decompose and return to nature, said Christopher, a former sergeant who served between 2007 and 2016 in Iraq and Afghanistan. Interest by veterans and their families in green burials parallels a national trend among Americans seeking alternatives to formal funerals with costly grave sites, underground vaults, and a standardized burial process that does not allow for individual expression, according to Ann Hoffner, who publishes Green Burial Naturally, a state-by-state guide to natural burials. The number of cemeteries offering green burials has grown from 42 in 2016 to more than 300 in 2024, Hoffner said. Hoffner first learned about green burials through her own experience seeking an alternative to a conventional funeral for her 94-year-old father, a World War II veteran who died in 2016. Edward A. Hoffer was an Army lieutenant who participated in the liberation of France, his daughter said. Hoffner published an essay about her father's natural burial at a wooded sanctuary, comparing it to a cousin's traditional funeral in a painted casket in a concrete vault under an astroturf temporary covering at a memorial park. An American flag was draped over her father's body, which is wrapped in a shroud of natural material. Mourners placed his body in a wooden wagon that was wheeled to his grave at Steelmantown Cemetery, a woodland burial preserve in New Jersey. An honor guard played taps and fired a three-volley salute as a final farewell after the body was lowered into the ground. The wild blueberries had been pulled back to admit his body and would be replanted, Ann Hoffner wrote. It was an extraordinary realization that he had joined an ecosystem. It would recycle the nutrients in his flesh and bones and weave them into life. While the Hoffner family holds a deed to his burial plot, there are no grave markers or headstones. The simplicity of green burials also makes them less costly for the survivors. They typically cost about $6,000, but prices vary by location and the services selected according to the Green Burial Council. Conventional funerals can run up to $15,000 with fees for viewing, burial refrigeration, transport, casket purchase, and embalming. Standard caskets and urns alone can cost thousands of dollars. When a veteran dies, the Department of Veterans Affairs provides a burial allowance to offset the costs of a funeral, with the family responsible for the difference. For service-connected deaths, VA pays up to $2,000 for burial expenses of former service members who died after September 11, 2001. It provides up to $1,500 for deaths prior to that date. If the veteran is buried in a VA national cemetery, some or all of the cost of transporting the deceased may be reimbursed. For non-service-connected deaths, VA will pay up to $978 toward burial and funeral expenses, with a $978 plot interment allowance if the veteran is not buried in a national cemetery. The National Cemetery Administration will accept cremated and intact remains for green burials at the three cemeteries participating in the pilot program. According to the National Funeral Directors Association, nearly 70% of Americans surveyed expressed interest in learning about green burials as a funeral option because of the lower costs and benefits for the environment. Congress in 2022 authorized the VA to establish green burial sections in national cemeteries. Under the National Cemeteries Preservation and Protection Act, a veteran's remains interred in a green burial section must be prepared without chemicals and using caskets and urns that will naturally degrade in the environment. The idea behind green burials is to allow the body to recycle in the natural environment with little disturbance to the surroundings, according to the Green Burial Council. When it comes to green burials, I like to say there are many shades of green. For some families, green burial means no chemical preservation of the body, a casket made of natural material, and no vault or grave liner if the cemetery allows, said Lily Birkel, director of funerals for the historic Congressional Cemetery in Washington, where 1,700 veterans are interred. The private nonprofit cemetery is unique among burial grounds in Washington for providing both natural burials and conventional funerals. At green burials, families tend to want to be active participants in their loved one's funerals, Birkel said. They want to put their grief into action, whether that's helping to bathe and shroud their person, or hand shovel earth at the cemetery, or lead their own heartfelt ceremonies without clergy. They want to be a vital part of it, she said. Burkle, who is a licensed mortician in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, said she appreciates that the National Cemetery Association is giving veterans and their families the option of green burials at some of its cemeteries. Natural burials are unavailable at most U.S. cemeteries, despite their growth in popularity over the last decade, she said. This is a giant leap forward to allow veterans' families to access to greener burial options, Burkle said. I love knowing that our veterans are beginning to have these choices. Jane Pennington, 98, of Maryland, said she sought a more eco-friendly alternative to cremation, which dumps toxins into the air, when she began making funeral arrangements for her late husband, an Army and Air Force veteran who served in 1945 and 46. Crematoriums are usually located in disadvantaged areas in the city, so my husband and I had decided, while he was alive, that we would start looking for an alternative, Pennington recalled. Kenneth Pennington, 96, died in 2023. The former Air Force corporal had served in an Army Specialized Training Corps while studying to be an engineer in college. He joined the Air Force after graduation and was assigned to a military installation in Dayton, Ohio. After her husband's death, Jane Pennington said she found Serenity Ridge, a new cemetery in Maryland where burial vaults and embalming chemicals are not permitted. A trail network leads to wooded burial sites. By offering a recreational green space with walking trails, families are invited to embrace the space itself, and the cemetery enjoys a dual purpose, said Ed Bixby, founder of the Global Green Burial Alliance, which promotes eco-friendly funeral options. There are more than 18 million U.S. military veterans. Many of the veterans are at an advanced age, which means a higher number of deaths are expected each year. Christopher, the Marine Corps veteran in Colorado, said he's thought about that statistic when considering a natural burial for his funeral someday. America basically has been at war every 10 years. In my view, we don't have the space it will take at veteran cemeteries to put people in $8,000 caskets and concrete vaults in the ground, he said. The amount of land that these cemeteries take up is ridiculous. I see natural burials as another way veterans like myself to give back to our country and community. Guys I served with did not enlist for the recognition, he said. We were just doing our job. That's just put me in a pine box. Some veterans show interest in lower-cost green burials offered at three national cemeteries. We are going to turn now to a newsletter that I just received from the Northern Arizona Veterans Administration Healthcare System. Prepare for VA sign-in changes. As you recall, last week I read an extensive article covering that. And they're saying in 2025 we're moving to two secure sign-in options, login.gov and id.me, and they want those changes to take place to continue accessing your MyHealth eVet account. Please create an account with login.gov or id.me by January 31st, 2025. And you can learn more about that change by going to www.va.gov/sign-in-changes. For in-person assistance with this transition, you can visit them at their Virtual Health Resource Center in Building 154 at the Bob Stump VA Medical Center in Prescott, Monday through Friday, excluding federal holidays, from 7:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. You may also reach us for over-the-phone assistance by calling 928-445-4860, extension 6488, or extension 6270. They appreciate your service and look forward to celebrating this milestone with you. Then we have, in Parker, Bringing VA Benefits Home event. That'll be January the 10th. Bringing benefits to you, attendees will have the opportunity to engage with VA representatives to learn about healthcare programs, file claims, and get answers to their VA-related questions and much more. Activities include healthcare enrollment, Understand and enroll in VA healthcare programs, claim filing, assistance with filing your VA claims, and VA representatives, direct interaction with VA staff for personalized advice and support. There'll be a Q&A session, clarify your doubts regarding claims and benefits. This event is part of the broader initiative by the VA to ensure that veterans have easy access to benefits and services they've earned. Join us for a day dedicated to serving those who have served us. This will be at the Blue Water Casino Showroom, and that's at 11300 Resort Drive, Parker, Arizona, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Friday, January the 10th. No appointment is necessary, and you can contact them at 928-458-8713. The VA at Parker 400, and that's January 15th through the 17th, the Northern Arizona VA Healthcare System will be in attendance at the Parker 400 Off-Road Race. We'll be offering VA enrollment, VBA assistance, Vet Center resources, and much more. Look for us on Pitt Row near the Parker Airport. For more information, you can contact them at 928-458-8713, and that's from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. January 15th through the 17th at the Parker 400 Off-Road Race. Wickenburg Veteran Stand Down, hosted by the American Legion Kellis Draper Post, 12, Arizona. This event will include services available to active military reserve, retired, disabled, and homeless veterans. Attendees will have the opportunity to engage with VA representatives to learn about healthcare programs, get answers to their VA-related questions, and much more. For more information, you can contact them at 928-487-0750. That's from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. Saturday, January the 18th. And that will be at the American Legion Post 12, and that's located at 176 North Frontier Street, Wickenburg, Arizona. Their website, www.wickenburgstanddown, all one word, wickenburgstanddown.com. OM Practice, January 2025, Community Picks. Start new habits with OM Practice this month. Northern Arizona VA Healthcare System veterans have free access to over 100 live online OM Practice classes weekly, an on-demand video library, and pop-up workshops every month. They have a monthly challenge, the Clean Slate Challenge. Begin 2025 with an achievable first start and a little community accountability to get moving and motivated. And that website is available by going to public.govdelivery, govdelivery.com, and signing up for the Northern Arizona VA Healthcare Newsletter. Special workshop, restorative yoga for seasonal stress relief with Prima. Come celebrate the spirit of the new year and give yourself the gift of stillness by opening your heart and taking some time for self-care as the new year begins. It's easy to feel overwhelmed this time of year, so come for the intentional downshift and learn some new skills. And this is January 19th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time or 1 p.m. Pacific Time, which I guess would make it 2 p.m. our time, and it's a 90-minute program, and again, that link is also available by subscribing to the Northern Arizona VA Healthcare System newsletter. The class of the month, Breathwork with Eric, every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at 7 a.m. Eastern Time in Yoga. Breathing is considered the link between mind, body, and spirit. This energizing and calming practice includes simple mindful movements and different breathing techniques to help improve lung capacity, settle, and clear the mind, gently energizing the body and balance the brain and nervous system. Bonus, this practice includes tactical skills for stress relief in your day-to-day. You can open your free account and simply follow the link to ompractice.com/veteransaffairs. And that's all one word, Veterans Affairs. And that's the information from the January Northern Arizona VA update and events. Our next item is from news.va.gov. 6 suicide prevention resources all veterans need to know. Programs and initiatives for all veterans, no matter when or how you served. This is from the 28th of December by Matthew Miller, the Executive Director, Suicide Prevention. And he says, from my perspective as an Air Force veteran with decades of experience working in veteran suicide prevention, there are a few things all veterans should know. Suicide is preventable. There is hope. VA offers a range of programs and initiatives for all veterans, no matter when or how you served. The first thing veterans experiencing life challenges should know is that suicide isn't the inevitable outcome. There are actions you can take to reduce your risk of suicide and prevent it. Veterans can find hope through VA's programs, initiative, and suicide prevention resources, which are open to all veterans, regardless of discharge status, no matter your enrollment in VA benefits or health care, and no matter when, where, or how you served. These resources cover everything from preventing a suicide crisis to support during a crisis. No one knows if a crisis will occur, but you're more likely to prevent suicide if you're prepared. There are 6 suicide prevention resources all veterans need to know about. First, the Veterans Crisis Line. If you're a veteran in crisis or concerned about one, contact the Veterans Crisis Line to receive immediate confidential crisis support. To reach responders, 24/7, dial 988 and then press 1. You can chat online at veteranscrisisline, all one word, .net/chat or text 838-255. For more information about the Veterans Crisis Line, visit veteranscrisisline.net. Your call, chat, or text is free and confidential, and you decide how much information to share. No matter what you're experiencing, responders can help. They can also connect you with the resources you need, including your local suicide prevention coordinator, who will contact you the next business day for continued support. Second, the Veteran Self-Check Quiz. Since stress and depression are some of the risk factors for suicide, it's a good idea to make sure you're managing them in healthy ways. One way to know if you might be headed toward a crisis is taking the Veteran's Self-Check Quiz, which is anonymous, voluntary, and confidential. To start, learn more about the signs of crisis. After you're finished, a VA responder will review your answers and leave a personal response for you on this secure website. If the responder feels follow-up resources could be helpful, they'll offer options. And that website is www.veteranscrisisline, all one word, veteranscrisisline.net/signs-of-crisis. You decide what's next. You may anonymously enter the online veterans chat to talk with a responder. You can get a referral to see someone in person, or you can decide to do nothing. It's all up to you. No follow-up services will be provided unless you request them. 3. The Safety Plan App. VA Safety Plan App helps you create a custom step-by-step action plan to keep yourself safe when experiencing thoughts of suicide. The app helps you identify personal coping strategies and sources of support, giving thoughts of suicide time to decrease and become more manageable. Once you create your safety plan, you can identify your reasons to live and explore more tools to help you cope. 4. Keep it secure. Increasing the time and distance between a person in a suicide crisis and their access to lethal means such as firearms and medications, alcohol, opioids, ropes, cords, or sharp objects can reduce suicide risk and save lives. VA's Keep It Secure program promotes awareness about the simple steps you can take to protect yourself and your family. That's available at www.va.gov/reach/lethal-means. 5, the Veteran Training Portal. Our online veteran training self-help portal provides tools to help veterans work on problem solving, manage anger, develop parenting skills, and more. The free tools are based on mental health practices that have shown success with veterans and their families. 6. Don't wait, reach out. Life has its challenges. As a veteran, you don't have to solve them alone. The Don't Wait, Reach Out program allows you to explore VA resources by category, including career challenges, experiencing grief or loss, feelings of isolation, living with a disability, and relationship challenges. When it comes to many VA resources, it doesn't matter how or when you or where you served, it only matters that you served. Having access to suicide prevention resources can help reduce your risk of suicide. If you're a veteran in crisis or concerned about one, contact the Veterans Crisis Line to receive 24/7 confidential support. You don't have to be enrolled in VA benefits or health care to connect. To reach responders, dial 988, then press 1, chat online at veteranscrisisline.net/chat, or text 838-255. If you'd like to access the links in this news.va.gov article, just go on news.va.gov and search for health. And that's 6 suicide prevention resources all veterans need to know. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for Weekly Reveille. And remember, you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona programming, such as Weekly Reveille, at a time of your choosing, or streaming on the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org. And you can also listen to the stream on your Amazon Echo or Dot.